At the top of our program, in 1973, Michigan Corrections Facilities held a little under 8,000 inmates. Today, the prison population has swelled to over 43,000 inmates, even as crime rates fell. The explosion in the prison population in the past three decades is due largely to tough-on-crime policies the state started implementing in the 1980s. Today, Michigan spends around $2 billion, nearly 20% of its general fund budget, on corrections. Now, some in Michigan are starting to ask if those policies are actually improving public safety or if they're all just an economic drain. The Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending, a nonpartisan public policy advocacy organization, recently released a roadmap to reducing the prison population and saving the state hundreds of millions of dollars every year. The organization says it can all be done without compromising public safety. And here to talk to us about the report and the increasing momentum for criminal justice reform in Michigan is Barb Levine, Associate Director for Policy and Research at CAPS and lead author of the report. Welcome to Current State,
Thank
Barb.
Thank you, Mark. I'm pleased to be here.
As I mentioned earlier, and as your report explains, the huge increases in the prison population have a lot to do with policy changes we have talked about on this program before that started back in the 1980s. Adult time for adult crime, I think, is how some of them at least got labeled. Talk to us about what those policies were and how they've influenced the number of inmates in Michigan prisons.
Well, the size of the prison population is simply a function of how many people come in and how long they stay. And what you mentioned is in terms of getting tough on juveniles was one of many policies that were adopted in the 80s, late 70s, 80s into the 90s that affected both who comes to prison and when they, if and when they get released. You had things like the felony firearm statute. You might remember the billboards that said one with a gun that gets you two, which meant that anyone who was in possession of a felony during the commission of a crime would automatically get a two-year mandatory flat sentence in addition to whatever they got for the underlying offense. Mm-hmm. There were changes to the drug laws, which fortunately were undone in 2000, largely undone already in 2003. Parole got tougher. Sentencing got harsher. So there was this whole truth in sentencing, so-called, came in 98, which completely eliminated any sort of credit sentence reduction for good conduct for prisoners, no matter how much they achieved in prison or what programs they participated in. So there was a whole series of these sorts of changes. And what our report does in part is review how the population grew so you can focus not just on broad generalities, but on the mechanics of how it grew in order to look at what could be rolled back.
How often do sentencing guidelines get reviewed or updated by the legislature?
Well, our sentencing guidelines were implemented in 98, and then the sentencing commission that that developed them was first defunded and then abolished. So the initial plan was that that commission would be ongoing and would review the impact of sentencing guidelines. That didn't happen. And so what happened was for a period of years after that, up until now, the legislature was back to doing things on an ad hoc basis, lengthening the sentences for different crimes, adding crimes, changing whether sentences were consecutive or concurrent. That's about to change, we hope. One of the reforms that did get adopted in lame duck last year was the creation of the Criminal Justice Policy Commission. And Governor Snyder made the appointments to that a few months ago. Full disclosure, I'm one of the appointees, so I'm on that commission.
Okay.
We've met, it's chaired by former Senator Bruce Caswell, and we met for the first time in a month ago. So it's just getting started, but that commission will have the authority to look both at sentencing guidelines, parole practices, probation, the whole gamut of things that affect how people get sentenced.
Did the ad hoc reforms that you referred to, did those have a tendency to exacerbate the prison? Okay.
They tended to, but the guidelines themselves, the legislative guidelines that came in 98, replaced judicial guidelines that had preceded them, and the legislative guidelines pushed some more people out of prison for low-end offenses, but they also increased the length of sentences for more serious offenders. So there was sort of an increasing attitude that for more serious offenders, there was no end to how much punishment was appropriate, when in fact research shows that there's no connection between how long somebody spends in prison and their likelihood of reoffending. So a harsh sentence may be appropriate as punishment, but keeping people on and on and on, and keeping people past the time they've served their minimum sentence has no impact on public safety.
Barb Levine is the Associate Director of Research and Policy for the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. We're talking about the organization's report on how to reduce Michigan's prison population and save the state hundreds of millions of dollars. Aside from the length of a prison sentence, Barb, the report also calls for the state to reexamine whether or not some of the people who go to prison for sentences less than 2 years really need to be there at all. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, there's a large number of people who come in with terms of 2 years or less. And the felony firearm sentences I mentioned are one group of those folks because it's a flat two-year sentence. And there are people, hundreds of people come in every year with only that two-year sentence. They've gotten probation for the underlying felony. But there are others. There are lots of other folks who get, you can get a 1 to 20. You can get, you know, it's up to the judge, of course.
Overly broad guidelines.
So, well, the statutory maximum might be 10 or 15. The minimum the judge imposes may be 1. And then the Department of Corrections doesn't have a lot of time to work with that person. You sort of have to wonder what the point is of giving someone a prison term that's that short. They're not there long enough to get much in the way of programming. Some people come in having served so much jail time that they're almost ready to walk out the door the minute they get there. They've served their minimum when they get there.
What would be an appropriate alternative to that scenario?
Well, I think we can do more with very focused community-based sanctions. The Council on State Governments, for instance, recommended putting a lot more resources into those folks who are high risk, who get probation but are high risk, so that you get a lot. You don't waste resources on people who are unlikely to reoffend, and you concentrate the resources on people who are high risk. So it can be treatment, it can be community residential programs.
Is there evidence that those kinds of approaches do impact recidivism rates? I mean, you alluded to what doesn't impact recidivism rates a minute ago. Is there evidence that that approach does impact recidivism?
Yeah, I can't claim expertise on specific kinds of community-based programs, but yes, I think there is a literature that shows that certainly it's as good as sending people to prison.
People entering the system is one part of the equation. The other is obviously the number of people exiting that. And one big criticism in your report is the way the state deals with people who are eligible for parole but don't receive it. How does the parole process impact the state's prison system?
Oh, the Council on State Governments actually found that parole was a bigger driver of overall length of stay than sentencing. I mean, the length of stay, as I said, is determined by how long the minimum sentence is in the first instance, but at that point, the parole board gets jurisdiction. And frequently, very frequently, there's a very big gap between the minimum and the maximum. And the parole board has the discretion to either release or not release somebody at any point in between there.
Who tends to serve on parole board?
Well, one of the big changes that happened was until 1992, Michigan had a civil service parole board, which was made up of corrections professionals. And the board didn't turn over as much, and people were insulated. Predicting people's likelihood of reoffending is obviously not an exact science. So you make the most reasonable decision you can based on all the evidence you have. But inevitably, on occasion, something goes wrong. And the Civil Service Board was at least insulated from the consequences of one bad decision, losing their jobs over one bad decision sort of feeling. In 92, the board was changed to appointees. And they had a mandate, certainly during the 90s and a little beyond, to get tough. So parole grant rates, particularly for people convicted of assaultive and sex offenses, fell dramatically. Now, that's changed again, but that's part of the problem. Parole grant rates are very volatile. They tend to change with whoever is on the board. And that's why we've pushed so hard for a presumption of parole for people, at least those who are low risk on the parole board's own assessment tools.
Our guest is Barb Levine, Associate Director of Research and Policy for CAPS, the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. Their report on how to reduce Michigan's prison population and save the state hundreds of millions of dollars was just recently released. I think a big question on some people's minds when it comes to prison reform, or at least their gut reaction, is that releasing prisoners to reduce spending might mean valuing savings over public safety or victims' rights. How do you respond to that concern?
First of all, we're talking about releasing people. We're talking about looking again at who goes and what the length of sentence is. When you're talking about releasing people, it is only after they have served their minimum sentence. And nothing in any of our proposals would impact public safety. Nothing would prevent a judge from imposing a long prison term for a serious crime. Nothing would require the parole board to release someone who's currently dangerous. But like I said, the research shows no relationship between keeping people longer and their likelihood of reoffending, or keeping people past the time they present any risk is simply a waste of lives and money. Nothing would affect victims' rights to participate in sentencing or talk to the parole board. The bottom line here is it's a false dichotomy. There is no debate about choosing between common sense reforms and concern for crime victims.
Just to play devil's advocate a little bit longer here, Michigan's prison population and the related dollar costs are indeed soaring, but Michigan's crime rate is down. Is it not? Can a case be made that those tougher crime reforms from years ago played some role in reducing the crime rate? Is that relevant?
Not much of a case, and there's been a lot of research on it. Michigan's crime rate has been falling for decades, as have national crime rates. And there's no question Michigan still has a high violent crime rate, and that certain cities in Michigan in particular have a long ways to go in reducing violent crime. But overall crime rates and violent crime rates have come down steadily. And bear in mind that Michigan's prison population was actually much larger. It peaked in 2006 at 51,500. Since then, our population has come down and our crime rates have continued to come down. Nationally, you see the same thing. States that have increased their incarceration rates have had crime rates go down, but states that have decreased their incarceration rates have also had crime rates go down. And research, academic research, tends to show no more than a 25%. No more than 25% of the decrease in crime can be attributed to the expansion of mass incarceration.
This is a really important conversation for our state, and it will no doubt continue. We want to thank Barb Levine, Associate Director of Research and Policy for CAPS, the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. We've been talking about their new report on how to reduce Michigan's prison population and save the state hundreds of millions of dollars. Thank you, Barb.
Thank you for your interest.